talking about the game is no game.
Stop. You're making me laugh so hard. What you're doing is so funny.
Dutcher and Rich.
You're on a roll. I am busting a gut. Ah.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We are Toucher and Rich. You ever see that show Love?
I haven't watched it, but I
oh, you're missing
that's
out.
That's a Netflix show, right?
Oh, you're missing out.
Okay.
It's so good.
It's got the woman from Parks and Recreation. What was the show? Community?
Community.
Yeah, okay.
And it's got a guy with a huge nose who, when he was at University of Iowa, went on stage and took a dump right there on stage.
You did a little Gigi Allen.
Wow. Yeah, we talked about it with Apatow. That was it's an Apatow show. Do you remember Leslie Arfin? You're not going to remember this. Who had a book, Dear Diary, that was with Vice?
No, I don't.
We had her on the show when we were at BCN. That's the guy's wife. But you'll love it. It's so great. No, you're not gonna like it. But it's one of those things that once you start, you got to kind of finish it. But there's a scene where the main character is dancing with his sister in front of his family, and they're doing the Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited. And then they say the finest song ever written about the female orgasm. So they're saying, so I'm So Excited is not I'm so excited like I want to dance with you. It's that they're already in the act of coitus.
Hmm.
And they're saying, she's, if I move real slow, I let it go. I'm okay. So excited.
And I just can't hide it. I'm about to lose control, and I think I like it.
Yeah,
I guess.
No, it's a female orgasm.
Okay.
So all this time, you've been dancing around.
I want to love you, squeeze you, wrap my arms around you.
Love you, feel you.
I just can't get enough, and if you move real slow, I let it go.
So what else could I let it go mean?
Dude, I don't know. Those are bubblegum lyics. I've always been like, all right, whatever.
See, you don't pay attention to the lyrics.
It's the first verse. You know, we're going
tonight's
for those
tonight,
pleasures
we're
in the
happen.
Night. Yeah, it's, tonight's the night we're going to make it happen. Tonight we'll put all other things aside, give in this time, and show me some affection. We're going for those pleasures in the night.
Yeah, they're banging.
Okay.
Yeah. And the guy's doing it right. You see, she likes to move real slow,
and then she lets it go.
Yeah,
okay.
She loses control of herself and goes into a world of ecstasy.
All right.
You let your kids listen to that?
I guess so.
Man,
what is Neutron Dance about?
That's about a whole other act.
That's about something.
Just remember Bronson Pinchot in the video.
That's memorable. Is that when Murphy's walking down the street and starts laughing at everyone in leather outfits, even though he does Raw in a leather outfit?
No, the Neutron Dance. I thought the Neutron Dance was the opening scene of Beverly Hills Cop, where he's like hanging off the side of the semi.
Okay,
it could be.
I don't
it's
know.
No busboys.
No, it's not.
But the thing about the thing that's the most ironic about Beverly Hills Cop is that Murphy's walking down the street and he sees guys in full leather suits and starts laughing, even though I think he was on the cover of Rolling Stone before that wearing a leather suit.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he wear one of those in Raw?
Yeah,
but this is even before Raw. Like, he was wearing straight leather suits. That's something you don't see anymore. That's an almost S&M situation. You don't see guys walking around with tight leather suits anymore.
No.
I bet you anything it comes back.
Leather suits?
Yeah.
Oh, there's probably some ironic band right now that's wearing leather suits.
I'm talking about in a non-ironic situation.
Not ironic?
Yeah.
Is Beverly Hills Cop 3 one of the, listen, there's so many bad sequels, but that's one of the worst.
I never saw it.
It's awful. Like, I
really?
Think that, I think
never
the main
it.
Like bad guy ran an amusement park.
Oh, I remember
being
that.
In a fight in an amusement park. There was the big action climax, I think, involved a roller coaster chase.
Okay.
Boy, it was so bad. Chase? I'm having a hard time
How
remembering
is that
what
possible?
Happened.
I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater too.
Never watched it.
Because that came out quite a long time after Beverly Hills Cop 2. That came out like 20 years later.
That was like 90. I bet it was like 96 or something like that when Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out. And that was when Eddie Murphy was kind of just like, you remember he made like a million movies after The Nutty Professor, and then just all of a sudden he fell off the earth?
Yeah, he fell off the earth, but during The Nutty Professor, did that make any money? He did Dr. Dolittle?
The Nutty Professor was a massive hit. Massive hit. I bet that movie, you got to think about the time it came out. I bet it made over $100 million. The Nutty Professor? They made a sequel. Nutty Professor was huge.
They made a sequel of Dr. Dolittle, I believe.
Well, I mean, Dr. Dolittle was like a kid's movie. But yeah, The Nutty Professor, that made a ton of
There's one funny scene. It involves farting.
I actually remember that movie being funny. It made $128 million in 96, The Nutty Professor.
Gross revenue, almost a quarter of a billion.
Yeah, dude, that movie was massive. That brought his career back.
Wow.
And you know what?
I am surprised at that.
Yeah, during that
time.
That
movie's horrible.
No, The Nutty Professor was all right. That one was okay.
No, it's every. You're thinking of the table where he's all the characters.
No, I thought when he was Buddy Love and he was, you know, the super strong guy, I remember there being some pretty funny scenes when he went out to dinner, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember liking that movie.
They're making another Beverly Hills Cop, by the way. I just found this out.
I'm sure
starring
it'll be great.
Eddie Murphy?
Yes.
Well, Eddie Murphy's been rumored to be in the twin sequel for years now, and I guess that's happening, is that he's the third twin.
Jerry Bruckheimer is behind Beverly
so
Hills Cop
it's going to be Schwarzenegger, DeVito,
and Eddie Murphy. Get it? He's black. They're twins.
Oh,
that can't happen.
Okay.
See, that's the other twist. Instead of him being strong and then the other guy being like, you know, I just love how in Danny DeVito in that movie, the whole role was that you were the leftover crap.
Yeah.
Well, he's like,
you know,
okay,
you got to
cool.
make a living. And that he was able to bang that chick. Like, that chick's head over heels for him, no matter what I saw Twins recently.
Why were you watching Twins recently?
It was on TV, and I was, you know, at home waiting to do something or crying in the corner. But DeVito has not a Kelly Preston.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, and so this girl's, like, infatuated with Danny DeVito, and no matter what, like, she sees him trying to escape with the suitcase, and she needs to jump in the car. But Kelly, if you're Schwarzenegger in that movie, you gotta be loving it. Because, like, every time that Kelly Preston lays eyes on him, it's like, ooh la la. And, like, he's in the shower and she's looking at him like,
oh yeah,
what beefcake.
Dude, Nutty Professor 2 made $123 million. So the first one made $128 million, and this is just in America. And Nutty Professor 2 made that much. You know, he made one movie that I don't even know was a huge hit, but it was under the radar excellent that was around this era. It was him and Steve Martin in Bowfinger.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Bowfinger
loves
was like
Bowfinger.
Way better than it should have been. And then he did like all these dumb movies like Meet Dave, where it was like a bunch of Eddie Murphy's in his head and we were like controlling a robot.
No, then there was like Showtime, and then Pluto Nash was in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah, Showtime with De Niro.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Well, De Niro just for like 10 years said, I'm making a paycheck.
Yeah.
Like I've done all the stuff that I want to do. I'm doing Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Wasn't there
I'm
one
doing
where
Analyze
he,
This.
He was like an alien. He was like an alien ship.
Meet Dave.
Oh, that's what it was.
There was a bunch of people inside of his head.
Right.
He was
that's
an alien
just
body.
An excuse to... Yeah. You know, be a million characters, show off that talent. Pete, go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, what's up?
Nothing. Got a quick, funny story about leather suits. I'm a little younger, and I'm in Providence. I go into this nightclub called the Prov, and I see this guy wearing an alligator leather suit, and I'm trying to get close, but the crowd's too big, and they're following him from side to side, and I get close enough, and I realize who it is. One Manny Ramirez in an alligator leather suit.
Of course.
It was a beautiful sight, gentlemen.
Yeah.
You know who else used to?
Of course he was.
In college, I used to have a picture on my wall of Charles Oakley in a snake skin vest with no shirt on underneath. And it was Maury shoes. And it was like, if it ain't Maury, it ain't leather. He was in a snake skin vest, no shirt, snakeskin pants, and snakeskin shoes. I don't know why it said if it ain't Maury, it ain't leather, but that was the situation.
Good God. By the way, I'm betting that was Manny's Pawtucket face. They like sent Manny down on rehab to Pawtucket, and he decided he loved it there and just wanted to stay.
Didn't want to leave?
No, seriously. There was a period of time where Manny's like, you know what? I don't need to be called back up. I'm fine here. I like it here.
It's so far away.
Well, I mean, that was Manny.
I mean, guys
whose
fingers that can run through their hair.
Yeah, that was Manny.
If you're Manny Ramirez, I mean, how could you find a way to get down to Pawtucket if you were up here with the big league team? So there you have it. I'm so excited by the Pointer Sisters.
Well, I think we've all learned something.
A ode to the female orgasm.
Yeah.
That's where it all starts and begins. And now you sit there and you listen to it and you realize the vile disgust that's going through your brain. As if women can have orgasms. Please, give me a break. We will be joined by Jeff Howe. We can talk about this Brandon Cooks trade. Here's the CBS Sports Minute with Boomer, brought to you by Neighborhood Health Plan.
Tutcher.
Is this what you want?
And Rich.
Are you happy now?
Tutcher and Rich.
Ah, sick.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Single back behind Brady. Tom drops back under pressure. Throws it downfield for Kutch, open at the 40. Throws back to the inside. And then he's going to get decked at the 41-yard line. Drilled by Malcolm Jenkins.
Man, he is bent over. Brady.
Pocket collapsing on Brady.
Brady got
Brad
hit.
And Cooks still down for the Patriots.
Five, the Sports Hub. We are Tutcher and Rich.
That was unfortunately the last play of Brandon Cooks as a Patriot.
All right, so Brandon Cooks has been traded to the Los Angeles Rams. Jeff Howe got out of that sinking ship that is the Boston Herald, and he's joined the Athletic.
It's kind of, I mean, the Athletic did a pretty damn good job. They announced who there's going to be writing for him. I know Flutish and Zhao is one of them who we like. I like Jay King, who writes for the Celtics. That's a good hire. I think Jen McCaffrey, it's a pretty good lineup. I don't even know when it launches, Jeff. When can people finally start reading you on the Boston edition of The Athletic?
Well, it was supposed to be next Tuesday, the 10th, but then Brandon Cooks got traded, so I wrote my first thing last night, and it should be posted, I would guess, momentarily. So I had to call a little bit of an audible.
Okay, all right. So what's the website?
It's theathletic.com.
Okay.
It's a subscription-based service, and I think one of the questions people usually end up having is, if I subscribe to Boston, can I see everything else? So, you know, yeah, you can. So if you subscribe now this week, we have the promo code, the T-shirt, 30% off, the whole nine. You can at least read, obviously, at this point, the Cook story whenever that posts, which, again, should be soon. Plus, like, you know, everything else across the country. So it's not like you subscribe to Boston, you only get Boston. You get everything. So, and there's a lot of talent, too. I mean, we have unbelievable hockey writers, baseball, basketball writers across the country.
All right. So, Jeff Howe, Brandon Cooks being moved. Was this a surprise to you? And what do you think they're going to do with these picks that they've acquired?
Well, now they have some flexibility. It wasn't a total surprise, just because they only had one or two options at this point. And I guess you always do with every player on your team. But the crossroads were coming. And I think when they got Cooks last year, they knew, all right, if it was a two-year arrangement, then so be it. And ultimately probably end up with a third-round compensatory pick in the 2020 draft. If he walks a year from now, you're thinking maybe if things work out really well, the market stabilizes, if he wants to take a hometown discount, you might be fortunate enough to get him to sign for like $12 to $13 million annually next year. But with the deals that were thrown around earlier this offseason, Sammy Watkins, I don't think he's ever had 60 catches in a season. He got, I think it was $16 million annually. There was, the other big deal there, another guy just got, dude from Jacksonville, Allen Robinson, coming off a torn ACL, gets $14 million annually. So you're looking at a year from now, Brandon Cooks probably getting between $15 and $16 million annually. You know, you could talk about 40% of that being guaranteed. So you're looking at like a five-year, $80 million contract with 32 guaranteed if he hits free agency. I mean, what's a hometown discount realistically look like? And the Patriots knew that there was almost no chance that they were going to be able to keep him. The Rams came calling at least 2 weeks ago, or at least the discussion started to get serious 2 weeks ago, I think, to the point where both sides recognized that there was a realistic chance that this was going to get put in place. I know the Rams were working on Cook's film and how to install him in the offense. The Rams were still involved in Odell Beckham, too. And to my understanding, their preference was Cooks for a number of reasons, but probably the realistic chance of actually acquiring Cooks over Beckham was there, and they needed a play for a receiver. They were aggressive, like they have been with a lot of other moves this offseason. They offered up that 23rd pick. I mean, it was to the point where it had to be a no-brainer for the Patriots. Now you got 23, 31, and a couple in the second, including that early one from the Garoppolo trade. I mean, you're in a spot where you can get a left tackle, you can get a quarterback, you can get front seven help. I mean, a corner if you need it. You can get a wide receiver if you need it. Or if you absolutely love one of these quarterbacks, you now have the collateral. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I mean, this is like probably a 1 in 100 chance. But you could package 2 or 3 of those picks and get closer to the top 10 and wind up with one of those top 4 quarterbacks, whichever one happens to slide the furthest.
Would they do that? Would they? Okay, because I know 1 in 100, but if, according to the Jimmy Johnson chart, if you package both the first round picks, you get up to 9 with San Francisco. Obviously, they're not going to get in the top 3. So, would they be willing to just see who falls to them? You know what I'm saying? Or would it be a draft day deal where, you know, they're on the clock? It seems unpatriot-like just to wait for a quarterback to fall to you.
No, so, I mean, they're not going to pull a Jets and sit at 6 and then trade to 3 and say that they had 6 guys in mind that they want to take. I mean, they're not moronic down there. So this is if they do have a guy in mind. Bill Belichick is not going to target a position in the draft. He's going to target a guy that he wants. So let's say he's looking at those top 4 guys and he thinks one of them can slide to, you know, maybe it's the top 10. I think ideally it's 11 because that's where the 5th-year option changes. The price tag drops significantly once you get into the 11 to 32 range. So if he is looking at the board and projecting, all right, 3 of those guys are probably going top 5, top 6. One of them could go as far down as 11 or 12. You know, how aggressive can I afford to be to get that guy if he drops? I'm not saying he's going to say, all right, well, I like 3 of these guys, and I kind of sort of like the 4th. Now I have to go up to get him. You know, he's not going to be in a position where he has to really trade the farm to get up into that area. Because, again, he has to get a left tackle. He has to get some front seven help. He probably has to get a tight end, a position in the draft that they really haven't been too aggressive at over the last 5 years. So, look, if the right guy doesn't fall, you're not going to go chasing a quarterback because you know, yeah, they got Garoppolo a few years ago, and that worked out tremendously. But there's been a Garoppolo. There's also been a Ryan Mallett and a Kevin O'Connell and a handful of other guys who have been higher to mid-round picks who just haven't worked out. And then, you know, you get a Matt Castle and a Tom Brady and a Brian Hoyer who are late rounders or undrafted who have been, you know, either a franchise-altering quarterback or a serviceable backup along the way. So, I mean, again, they don't have to chase somebody if it's not the guy that they truly believe in.
Okay, Adam Schefter tweeted yesterday, Jeff Howe, that after this deal was made, he said that he believes, oh, here it is. He goes, New England trading Brandon Cooks to L.A. means the Patriots will not be trading Rob Gronkowski this offseason, as some have speculated. I can't figure out I don't understand what one has to do with the other. Do you believe that this trade means that Gronkowski is indeed going to be here the next season and that a trade will not happen?
I don't want to pretend like I know everything going on down there. I never got the impression that Gronk was getting traded. So that's been some fun speculation. I don't know if you know, I understand that other teams have been interested. I mean, to the point where who knows if the Cooks trade happens if the Rams don't make that call and that aggressive push. I mean, I don't know if the Patriots were actively shopping him, just like I don't think they would be shopping Gronk. I mean, you know Belichick's MO. When he starts shopping a guy, he just gets rid of him. I mean, you saw how quickly they traded Garoppolo, Collins, etc. So, yeah, I mean, other teams would probably come calling, but I can't imagine the Patriots were too hot on trying to unload Gronk. The feeling down there is he's playing, and I'm still not 100% sure if Gronk has told them that or if he has just given them that feeling through, you know, telepathy or whatever, but, I mean, they believe he's coming back and playing. I was never given any sort of impression that he was the guy that they were going to move. Now, why are the two connected? Because I guess if you want to look at the offense as it's constructed, yeah, now you got Edelman and Hogan, the pass-catching backs, and, of course, Gronk, and then whoever sort of emerges from the rest of that wide receiver depth. But do you really want an off-season when Tom Brady's going into his about to turn 41 and to get rid of Gronk and Amendola and Cooks, three guys through various degrees all have a ton of Tom Brady's trust, and now you want him to rework the offense on the fly at this stage of his career. And, you know, the theory of Belichick would want to stick it to Brady doesn't fly either, because I'm not sure how many more years he has left. So I'm not sure he wants his quarterback to deal with that type of adversity at this point. So, you know, I think that's probably why the dots are connected. But I still just never believed the trading Gronk was a likely scenario.
Well, even if you keep him, is that enough? Because, I mean, you look at the wide receiver depth chart, you've got... you know, with Amendola gone and Cooks gone, you got Julian Edelman, who's returning from injury, Chris Hogan, obviously, who's reliable. But then it goes Philip Dorsett, Malcolm Mitchell, Kenny Britt, Patterson, McCarron, and there's a bunch of question marks there. Do you think that they're going to make some sort of move to get another reliable receiver out on this roster before the season starts?
Well, I did see, you know, Jordan Matthews was in town yesterday. And, look, he's an intriguing player, but he's still a free agent for a reason. So I'm not going to tell you Jordan Matthews is going to come in and save the offense. But they have enough now. They just are no longer injury-proof. You know, you can't go into training camp and say, I mean, what you have in terms of your starters and what you put out there on the field, and don't forget all the pass-catching backs they have, too, especially James White and Rex Burkhead. You can't have one of those receivers all of a sudden go down. You know, one of these guys can't tear an ACL.
Yeah.
Malcolm Mitchell can't have another offseason completely erased because his knee is in awful shape. You know, you can't just have that type of situation and assume that everything's going to be perfect again. So, yeah, you need reinforcements. You need that tight end who can be reliable if Gronk goes down, whether it's for a week or six or whatever. So you absolutely have enough. You just have to hope that you don't lose multiple bodies in one position like you did a season ago.
All right, Jeff Howe from TheAthletic.com. Now he can come back on the show now that he's at TheAthletic.com. It's a great treat. Jeff Howe, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Congrats. Thanks, man.
Yeah, there is...
good writers, man. They got quite a decent stock full of guys and gals.
Competition in town.
Yep.
And the sinking ship that is the Boston Herald continues to have people jump off. Not a good situation over there. Not a good situation over there. So good for Jeff Howe to get out of there while he did.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You smelled something like on fire.
No.
Wondering what was going on.
No, it's when my coffee's not near me. I freak out a little bit.
Oh, I was just going to say, you smelled something? Okay. I always think there's a fire in here, and no one's told us.
Rich. Are you still ripping on me for the other day?
Fred, when you were gone, he dropped a major one in here.
It was bad.
It was so bad. We were all covering noses during breaks, and Bird, of course, wanted to get in on the act, made sure he made a big show of coming and holding his nose while he drops some papers.
In fairness, that's like a rarity, though, right?
No,
like
it is a rarity,
unicorn.
But I mean, it was but, you times three.
But I've been
three.
Saving apparently I was saving it up because it was like the fog of war. It's the beard, I think. With the beard comes the smell.
Jesus. But in fairness, this room could be worse. But I don't know if it's like someone's house. Like, you go in, you can immediately smell it. Like, everyone's house stinks. But when you live there, you can't tell. So I wonder if this, I know.
It's like when you own a cat. It's like everybody goes, well, they got a cat.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, ours is different than all the other houses. It doesn't smell like a cat. Yeah, you got a cat.
So obviously my house has a scent, but I have no idea what it is.
Sure.
Yeah. And so you go into some people's house. Everyone's house smells.
Yeah.
But some are grosser than others. So maybe we become, like the commercial says, maybe we become nose blind.
Maybe. Yes. All I know is that when Dan Roach comes in here, we can immediately smell the cologne. That's the one time that you know that.
He wears cologne to be on television. He thinks television is scratch and sniff. Like, he wears cologne.
It's a mindset with Dan. Is that every office, though?
Be classy.
The only thing is that every office, or is that just we're completely removed from that and nobody does anything here? Like, nobody wears any kind of cologne or scents like that. Is that every office?
I would imagine if you're in sales or something where you have to entertain people that you would wear cologne. But I think that if you have an office job that you wouldn't wear cologne.
I don't know.
Because imagine being in a cubicle all day next to someone who has an assload of Dracar on.
Zoe doesn't wear it. Dan, the other one says Zoe wears cologne.
I don't.
If he does, then he does. Then he's
nice.
You're much better at it than Dan.
Wow, you've never smelled Zoe's cologne?
No.
And he like accosted me, if that's a word.
He's a big cologne guy. He'll tell you what kind it is and probably how much.
I've had a bottle of John Varvatos cologne for maybe 20 years. I still have it.
I see. I know guys who like can't. Like the slightest whiff of cologne will make them sick. And can you imagine working next to somebody who just loads it on every day?
Is that I can't imagine that. You know, you put in a little Axe body spray and chicks just start going, whoopsie-daisies, the panties need to go.
You got to say something. I mean, imagine having to say something to the guy next to you that he wears too much cologne.
I would have no problem doing that, actually. I've made fun of Dan Roach numerous times. Because it's ridiculous to come in here at 6 in the morning wearing cologne. It's so dumb. You're literally not going to see anyone that doesn't work for the show. Or Zolak and Bertrand. All right, so Dante DiVincenzo from Villanova, redshirt sophomore, has the game of his life, 31 points. The Wildcats win the national championship, so what's everyone do? They go try to find out bad stuff about him.
Yep.
So immediately you can't let a guy just, I mean, really 24 hours. You can't let someone have 24 hours of success. And they didn't go back and find out that he did anything violent to anyone. They didn't go back and find out he was involved in all kinds of crimes. They didn't find that. So they immediately go to Twitter. Immediately go to Twitter and they dig up tweets from 2011.
And by the way, you had to go. It was more of a dig than just going to his Twitter, because his Twitter account has been deactivated for a while now. He deactivated his account, I think, several months ago. And he hasn't been on. That's at least what I was reading. So you would have to really go back and find a way to find out these old tweets. Now, these tweets that you're talking about, the ones that are coming up to haunt him.
Yeah, so he was probably 15 years old.
He was. See, they're saying that he was in high school. And if you calculate the amount of years from how old he is now, and they said it was like 4 years ago, whatever. Yeah,
no, it's 7 years ago. These tweets are from 2011 and 2012.
Yeah, okay, he's not even 20 right now, right?
Yeah, he was like 20, 21 in high school.
Okay, then he's like 13 or 14.
Yes, yeah, so he's 13 years old.
And he's using a slang for gay. I think in one of them he uses the N-word.
Well, it's a Meek Mill quote.
So he's quoting a Meek Mill line that's got the N-word
from the word,
so it's not even him calling somebody one.
No, but he's 13. Yeah, it's not a hate crime. I mean, he's obviously putting up lyrics like an idiot 13-year-old.
I just think it's amazing that we live in a time where you are not allowed to be an adolescent and make mistakes.
No.
And learn from it.
I've never heard of DiVincenzo before. No one had, obviously. So I've never heard of him before. Is there a way we can knock him down a peg? This spoiled athlete that's never going to play professional basketball, can we knock him down a little bit?
I feel bad for my kids, man. It's like if you mess up, even if you're 12 or 13 now, it's something that will haunt you the rest of your life. I mean, think of all the dumb stuff that you knew or you said or you did when then, but you learn as you get older that you can't do that.
If you gave
That's what being an adolescent's about.
If you gave me a Twitter account when I was 13... it would be a disgrace.
How about 80% of the kids who got a Twitter account when they were in seventh or eighth grade?
It's too hard. It's too hard to deal with this crap. This is all, you know, Facebook is selling all your information and all this garbage. Twitter's a cesspool of awfulness. I mean, Laura Ingraham says stuff every night. And she's now is suspended and possibly going to get fired for a tweet. That's the thing, is why are you on there? What are you doing? There's nothing in this DiVincenzo stuff doesn't even make sense. He goes, my name is Dante and I'm a flaming homosexual. And then he says something about butts.
Okay, and
to
he's
my
13.
Dad, I'm a pee now because I don't want to play effing soccer. So there you go. This is the crimes that he's up to. They're not even coherent thoughts. They're just nonsense spewed by a 14-year-old, but you can't have it. Hopefully when our kids, who are very young, hopefully when our kids start getting on social media, again, I'm very much hoping that people have gotten kind of over it, that you know, Facebook kind of falls down a couple rungs, even though kids don't use Facebook anymore, that Facebook kind of goes away because it's all crooked and uncontrollable and has gone out of control. I don't see Twitter existing much longer.
I don't know. As long as the president, that's his primary form of communication.
Under the current administration.
He's kept it alive. I mean, it's his primary form of communication.
All right, so maybe you have 7 years left of Twitter. Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubting it's his primary form of
He saved Twitter.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Because really, if I'm just anybody, why am I on Twitter? Like, there's, honestly, I can understand Facebook, even though they steal your information, because you can put pictures up and here's how, you know, and I can be very selective of who my friends are and who can see the stuff.
See, I like the positive sides of Twitter. I do like it. Like, up-to-the-minute news, I like that. I follow
part
the writers.
Of it, I agree.
I like it.
You can, well, the writers, half the time, it's Ford tweeting out the same article five times to see if you'll click on it.
You just have to pick the ones you like to follow.
There's no positive to Twitter. I mean, you could join a website or go to a website and get up-to-the-minute information.
Yeah, but if you have that information delivered to you quickly.
If I'm someone who's not in media, why do I need Twitter?
That's a good point.
Well, here's the one reason I like Twitter. I like Twitter because, like, if I'm out and about and I see a couple of helicopters in the sky covering something, like, okay, there's obviously some news story breaking, and I'll check why are there helicopters or whatever.
That's a very, very, very limited reason to use Twitter.
Happens a lot for me.
There's a lot of times where there's an emergency involving helicopters.
Or I will see, like, a bunch of police cars outside. I also follow a Twitter account that has a guy who listens to, like, the crime, like, the CBs and everything.
I
like that.
You've sold me.
Well, I use it. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I like it.
Is that you can figure out
why
there's
cops.
I like
up-to-the-second news.
Right. You can figure out why there's helicopters in the air.
Yes. I know when someone has been stabbed on my street before I go to work.
Right. Which I'm sure happens all the time.
It does.
How often has someone
in a high-crime neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. Probably once every 2 months, there's a stabbing on my street. I'm not kidding.
Your street?
Yes.
Right? Not like 2 blocks over near the common.
Well, it's on my street, which is within 5 blocks, yes.
Okay.
Because you're in a high-rent area.
I mean, downtown. But there's stabbings all the time downtown.
So every 2 months there's a stabbing.
Maybe even more.
Street?
Like, yes, within 5 blocks of where I live, yes. There are probably at least, I can pull up.
I can buy within 5 blocks of him.
Dude, I live near the theater district, too. There's always stabbings in the theater district. Like, think about those clubs that are over there. It's Aaron Hernandez world.
So, well, I mean, okay. But regardless, that's a very, 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 very unique and specific thing. I mean, again, you could just put on a police scanner. I mean, if you're saying the reason that you like Twitter is because you can find out why helicopters are in the sky or why police cars are around, that's very unique to you.
Yes, but it's a reason I use it. I also like the breaking news.
Well, I mean, you can find, if I'm somebody who's not in media, I have no idea why I need it. I have no idea why I need it. They should call it helicopterinthesky.com then.
Or maybe that's just the name of the Twitter account.
Is helicopter in the sky?
Helicopter in the sky.
Okay. Also, there's people who use it for the trains. I know that there's a Twitter accounts.
The T needs that badly.
No, and the T needs to let people know. I'm sure there's no app or any other way to find out about the train schedule.
Yeah, but it's all in one place.
Okay. Very good. So you use it for the train and to find out if someone's been stabbed.
Yep.
These are the two reasons.
And for news breaking. Adam Schefter breaks news.
Why do I need Adam Schefter's news?
Because he's the first one.
But why do I need it? Why can't I find...
If you're not in media.
Yeah, why do I have to know it right away? Why can't I...
That part I
can't. Why at my leisure can I not go to any sports website, of which there are dozens, and find out the information?
I could do that, but I like having it all in one place. Faster the better.
But why would I need that if I was not someone who's not in media?
Well, I like to know that. I mean, it's things I care about.
Okay, this is part of the problem. So I'm checking my phone constantly. You're checking your phone constantly. I mean, that's what you're doing. If you need something up to date, you're checking your phone constantly. Like, you're always on it, always looking for something, which is not necessary. It's not something that's necessary in life. In fact, I would venture that it's unhealthy, very unhealthy to be doing that. I mean, if you want something that's up to date and you constantly need to have up to date information, how often do you look at Twitter?
It's not constantly. I like to have it. If it's out there, I like to have the first one to do it.
You need up-to-date information, which means if it's coming out immediately, you need to be looking at it immediately. How many times a day do you look at Twitter?
Oh, tons. Tons.
And that doesn't seem to be any kind of problem to you. That you're, I mean, you walk looking at Twitter.
You know what? I try not to do that. That's something I have tried to do. Is I try not to walk, and especially when you're walking around the city. I think that that's ridiculous. I always try to keep my phone in my pocket.
All right, because if you're talking about immediate information, that means that you're always looking at your phone.
It doesn't mean I need it right away. It means I like having it first before the websites do. If it does break, I'm right there.
Wait, then you need it right away. That's you're contradicting yourself.
I like having it when it's at its earliest, and that's breaks on Twitter. News breaks on Twitter. It doesn't break on a website.
I understand that, but you would have to be looking at Twitter when the news breaks.
Well, you could say that you could happen to be on Twitter and a news breaks while you're looking at it. Yes, that does happen.
Okay. Well, you would have to be looking at it. So that means you have to be looking at it.
And I just said I look
constantly
at Twitter a lot.
Yeah. Not good. You haven't sold me on it at all. Not good.
Well, you asked me why I like it. And that's
I don't think
I like
Rich
it
is trying to sell you at all. Yeah, I think he's very unapologetic like for any of this. He's not trying. You're not on Twitter, and proudly so. You thump your chest and say, you guys all suck on Twitter. I'm not dealing with you, you idiots, so I'm out. Rich likes it. He's not trying to sell you to get back on. He's just saying why he likes it.
I get almost 90% of my information as far as news breaking from Twitter.
Yeah, in the media, I'm the same way as Rich.
In the media?
Yes.
Because outside of the show, do you need Twitter? Like, but outside of the hours
I'll
of 6
check
to 10.
It. I won't check it as much as he does, but
well,
I check
he's
it
constantly
sure
on it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll check my phone, so I don't know, three, four times an hour, something like that.
Three, 4 times an hour?
Yeah.
That's probably me, too. A little more than that, maybe.
Yeah, he's a little more than me, but I'll check it. Yeah.
Oof. Got to put that down, baby.
Yes.
You got to get in the silence.
My wife is very much on me about that. Yes.
She tells you to put it down?
Constantly.
You look at it at dinner?
I have in the past, and I get yelled at.
Oh, you see,
that,
I can't
yes
do that. Now, there's certain
I
times
have
where
in the past,
yeah,
and it's there's something going on sports-wise that I'm very interested in. I will look, and now it's to the point where she will take the phone from me.
Like a game?
No, not a game. Like if there's a story going on, something like that I'm interested in. I have a very bad habit of doing that.
Mm. Yes. And I like to see Adam Jones yelling at listeners, too.
Well, that's always fun. Worth the price of admission to see the Dark Knight go after people.
And right, and you also get to miss out on such things like Scott Zolak live tweeting Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
And that is glorious in its inception, right, is it not?
I'm sure it's as popular every year. All right, we will return in just a moment. Man by name of Eddie Money.